Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
Summer of Don, it's Album Nerds Podcast. Dude, I got Andy and Don with me. Andy, it's summertime. Living easy? Question mark?
Yeah, I'm keeping the simmer on low, I would say.
Back of your neck getting dirt and gritty?
Back of my neck has got a nice tan, I would say. Slightly red.
Is it simply red?
It's not quite that painful.
Good one. So this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, and each other. And to that end, Don's been with us for about 100 episodes or so, and we proclaimed it the Summer of Don, so we'll get into the details of that in a minute. But we'll be talking about one classic album today that we covered before Don's time with us, and this is his opportunity to get in on the conversation. We're also going to have a deep question from Don.
A lot of Don.
That's the Summer of Don.
Dun, 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 dun.
And then we're going to give some shout-outs to some albums and album-related items that we're digging. We're going to spin the wheel of musical discovery to find out what we'll talk about next time. But this week, let's kick off that Summer of Don.
I proclaim this the Summer of
Donnie Lakey.
Talking about.
Yes, so it is the Summer of Don, and it doesn't mean a summer full of Morrissey and The Cure. What it means is, I've gone back into the archives of the Album Nerds, episodes from before I joined the show. So I came up with a list of records that I'd like to discuss. I gave the list to Wadbot, who put it on the wheel of musical discovery, and it landed on The Doors' L.A. Woman, which you guys discussed on episode 81.
Awesome. So long ago. My beard still had color in it.
Wow.
You guys made a lot of records. We don't need to be perfectionists. We'll just do a couple takes on everything. And he was right.
Yeah, so The Doors' L.A. Woman was released in April 1971. This is the sixth studio album by the band, formed in Los Angeles in 1965, featuring vocalist Jim Morrison, keyboardist Ray Manzarek, guitarist Robbie Krieger, and drummer John Densmore. Also features some bass playing from Jerry Scheff, who used to play with Elvis Presley, and rhythm guitarist Mark Benno. It was recorded with Bruce Botnick instead of Paul Rothchild, who had produced all of their previous records.
I heard Bruce Botnick might be socially involved with Wadbot. I don't know if you heard that.
The robot found love.
They are an item. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, let's hear the title track. This is L.A. Woman.
Did you know the lost angel, city of night, city of night.
Yeah, so this that track is supposedly about Morrison's love for Los Angeles. In the bridge, he refers to a Mr. Mojo Rising, which is, of course, an anagram of Jim Morrison.
Very cool.
I think it's also a metaphor for his sexuality, I would say. Right?
Yeah. I mean, that's like a blues term, mojo. There's a lot of mojo in early blues.
And Austin Powers.
Yes.
Mojo.
And then there's cross-mojination, baby. But yeah, that mojo, and then the mojo rising, and then from what I came across from an interview with John Densmore, the drummer, he said that he kept a slow tempo and then did a slow build for that mojo rising and kind of make like a orgasmic crescendo in the song. So yeah, definitely a love song to LA, and I think a goodbye as well. I think he had Jim Morrison had intentions of leaving and going to Paris. So
fellas, did this album get your mojo rising?
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is like an all-time fave. It was one of those like influential records for me growing up. As a teenager, I was really big into The Doors and Jim Morrison in particular. And
Weed.
This, I was...
Black Lights.
Yeah, not much has changed in the last 20 years, but I always felt like this was like among their stronger studio albums, if not maybe their strongest. So yeah, for me, it's always had a kind of a special place in my heart. My clickbait headline for this album is Leave It to the Doors to depict sunny LA with funky blues and desert storms. Just like, you know, LA, you think of like these beaches and, you know, sunshine and perfect climate, but The Doors always kind of tinge things with the darkness and sinisterness.
Okay. Well, I'll give my clickbait headline. Doors light fire one more time before riding off into the storm.
I get it.
Oh, nice.
But actually, you know, as I was listening to Riders on the Storm, I was actually kind of thinking about how the band, they're kind of like riders on the storm. You know, I feel like that's sort of their vibe, like these strangers that are kind of coming from this dark place.
Yeah,
you know, maybe you can choose to go along with them, you know, on this weird journey. Yeah, and this was the end.
Yes.
So my clickbait headline for this one last look through the doors of perception before they were closed permanently.
Aww.
They were kicked off the road after Jim's legal issues, you know, and arrests, and their tour got canceled, and I think that drove them into the studio. They needed to take control again, right? So that's what this album sort of felt like, becoming the band that they were and that they were meant to be and that they had been. It was a nice closure to the whole thing. So,
all right, well, let's hear the opening cut from the album. This is The Changeling.
There was something very feline about that guitar line.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds cat-like to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I hear it. It's funny, I don't think I've ever actually really paid much attention to the guitar line on that song until now.
You're welcome.
I think, as we were kind of alluding to previously, like, this record kind of nicely bookends their career, you know, kind of almost goes back to where they started with their self-titled debut a few years earlier. And this is kind of like a pretty raw, loose, kind of like just rock, you know, blues rock especially record. I love that about them. I think that's when they're at their best, and it sounds like they're having fun on this record. There's lots of like kind of background noises and screams and shouts and whatnot that kind of give it like a fun live quality to the music here. And yeah, I mean, the album was only recorded in 6 days. Many songs were supposedly only done in a few takes. Something exciting and just, you know, vital, you know, very alive about doing that recording process. And they were kind of in like this big old abandoned warehouse, kind of big space. And it sounds like it on this record. Like, yeah, it's a big, loud sounding, just kind of booming record.
Like, The Changeling sounds like a Doors song. And then throughout the album, they kind of stick more to that basic sound. There are some weirder moments. And I think that lyrically, this is a little, The Changeling is just sounds sort of like a creature of myth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think Jim's referring to himself. Like, he's changed from fame and fortune, but he wants to change into something else. He doesn't want to be that, you know, getting out of the spotlight, a desire to become a better person, ditch the rock star thing, be a writer, a poet, you know, move to Paris.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think in many ways he kind of saw this part of his career as kind of coming to an end and maybe starting something else as more as like a, you know, artistic savant sort of,
yeah,
hanging out in Paris with that artsy crowd sort of thing.
Right.
Actually, I kind of feel like this album is more about the other three members of the group than Jim Morrison. I almost feel like it, in some ways, I mean, it's hard to say he ever took a back seat, but I feel like it's more them than him in this one. Like, he's more like along for the ride.
I mean, I think it's the lyrics that make it seem like it's,
yeah,
like it's him, you know. So, but then there were songs like Love Her Madly that were clearly a Robbie Krieger type of song, you know what I'm saying?
Mm. Yeah.
So
it really sticks out as being just way more composed and sort of polished than the rest of the record.
I feel like, what's the one that down so, I've been down so goddamn, what's that song called?
Yeah.
Been down so
been down
long.
So long.
Okay. I feel like that one, I mean, I imagine he just kind of improvised those vocals.
I think, like, from what I'd read, a lot of these songs had been written years in the past or were taken from some of his older poetry notebooks. I think that song you mentioned there, Been Down So Long, was taken from an old blues song to some degree. Not exactly, but
sounds it.
Yeah, Jim was pretty heavy into alcohol at this point of his life and, you know, just drinking on the regular. So I imagine it's pretty hard to produce art. But somehow these guys, I don't know how they pull a record like this out of a state of that like they were in. But it's pretty amazing.
All right. Well, let's hear another cut. This is L'America.
Creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, those rhythms and just the overall vibe of that song, it kind of feels like a nightmare to me or something, or like you're starting to go insane.
Like, yeah, it feels like the music to a French silent film or something where there's a vampire or something. I don't know.
Yeah, in fact, it was intended for the soundtrack of this movie called Zabriskie Point, which I've actually had heard of before because, you know, Pink Floyd ended up on that soundtrack instead.
Really?
And actually the song Us and Them actually came from a part written for that movie. Supposedly a terrible movie, by the way. But anyway,
a great soundtrack.
Yes. So I supposedly this song was originally just called Latin America, and it became L'America. And it was actually originally written and recorded during the Morrison Hotel sessions, which was the previous album.
Yeah, so weird how they, especially Densmore's percussion, like the jazz and that sounded like a march, and like he just grabbed whatever felt right from whatever style and plugged it in, and it became part of their sound, which is just unusual that a drummer could influence the sound so much.
I was surprised listening back to this how much the rhythm does change up track to track. There's a wide variety of takes, and even within a song it changes quite a bit at times. Which I don't think of the Doors as being like a, you know, technical sort of like, you know, prog rock group who are shifting up time signals all the time. But he is pretty interesting behind the drums there.
These guys are all so good at their instruments, though. You know, so this isn't just like a garage rock band or something. I mean, they all really know what they're doing, and they're really tight. So, you know, I know the Doors catalog pretty well, and I kind of struggle to rank them.
You celebrate it?
I celebrate their entire catalog.
Nice.
And this is one that I usually put, you know, probably in like the top three. I remember in episode 81, I think, dude, you mentioned that you had this with I think you had Strange Days number one, either this or the self-titled.
No, I do the self-titled number one.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's how I feel right now.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say I agree, because I think Strange Days might be my favorite.
That's number two.
See, that's towards the bottom of the list for me.
Really? Huh. Yeah. But this is always up there. And then, I mean, it'll change with my mood.
I did once again listen to all six of the Morrison Doors albums, not the two without him that they recorded after he passed away. But I did do that exercise again where I listened to all six, just like on episode 81.
Nice.
And yeah, you still feel the same?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I love this album. I guess just my personal preference, I guess I like sort of the weirder vibe, you know, so, I mean, there's certainly a lot of weird on this album, but relative to the Doors catalog, it's not that weird, and it's much more, you know, I guess rootsy. I would actually say it's more like of this earth, and I feel like Jim Morrison is less of a space cadet or less of an alien and more just like a human being. I think like in the film, The Doors, I think he calls himself like the Greek god Dionysus or whatever, and I think in the early days, it was like he was this, you know, he was basically like selling the ideal of excess and going to like the dark places of our minds and stuff like that to find peace or to find whatever. And now, like by this album, I feel like he did that and it like didn't go anywhere. And so now he's just kind of like the sad, fat, drunk, you know, guy
singing the blues.
Yeah, now, that's right? Yeah. So I guess I find that less appealing, although it's still very appealing. Okay, well let's hear the last track, Riders on the Storm. If you give this man a ride, sweet family will die.
Killer on the road. Yeah. All those little details in this song.
It's amazing.
I mean, lyrically it's kind of all over the place of, you know, riders on the storm, storm of life, of existence, that we're all riding along, but then riders on the storm is in that lyric referencing a murderous hitchhiker, the darkness that surrounds us, all of that.
His brain squirming like a toad. It's a good line.
Yeah,
sounds about right. It was the last song recorded by all four members of the Doors, which is very fitting because it is like, this is the end, you know, on the final track on the first album. That's what this totally feels like.
Yeah. It almost feels like a little bit like their theme song to some degree, like kind of like just thinking about themselves to some point.
Yeah. And like I listened to it on headphones for the first time. I usually listen on stereo speakers, and I heard some of those details I hadn't really picked up before, including at the end when he's whispering Riders on the Storm as he's singing it. Ray Manzarek said something about that it's Jim Morrison coming from the ether, from the other plane of existence and touching us.
Love that guy.
Yeah.
He loves to wax poetic about this.
Yes, he does. I mean, hell, man, you know, you get older in life and you want to talk about your achievements. There's a lot of guys who are like, I was the high school football quarterback. This guy, if he wants to brag, I'll allow it, you know?
Yeah. Good.
It's a fitting ending. It's a epic song. It stirs up all kinds of emotions, and it's just the perfect way for Jim Morrison to say goodbye to the Doors and to the world just a few months later. I mean, the album was released in April and he passed away in June of 71. So yeah, that's just crazy.
Yeah. Everything with them happened very quickly. I think it's one of the strongest songs that they ever released. And honestly, I think it really holds up well. It's such an interesting kind of unconventional song structure to it. And then you add in all the cool production notes, and it's just very unique. And it's so Doorsy, you know. It's just kind of a little odd, a little dark and mysterious, and very it's cool.
Ambient.
Mm-hmm.
Or like you probably start feeling when you're on Ambien.
All right. What do you think, fellas? Album Nerds Hall of Fame? An album so good, we've now talked about it twice. So what do you think, dude?
Yeah. I mean, clearly. I mean, we were all just gushing about it and tearing up a little bit. So yeah, I'm going to say yeah.
Maybe? Yeah, I think this is probably in my top albums of all time sort of list. I don't know where it'd be exactly, but it definitely deserves a place in the Hall of Fame.
All right. Well, congratulations to the Doors' L.A. Woman.
Excuse me, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Well, one thing I've brought to the show since I joined is some deep questions.
Very penetrating. Yes. Yeah. Probing questions.
So, L.A. Woman, we all agreed, is one of the strongest Doors albums. And, of course, it was their last, at least with Jim Morrison. What other things have ended well?
I was thinking about this, like... My initial thought was like, man, nothing is like ever really safe. You know, even like the Doors, like they had some records that came out after Jim had passed. And it's like, you're not exactly tarnishing the legacy, but it's not exactly part of the original timelines or you know. But for me, looking back, I recently came across some footage of the Bulls Jazz 1998 finals game where Jordan hit that final shot with a few seconds left.
I miss basketball seeming magical.
Yeah, there was something magic about, at least for me, I probably just the age and nostalgia. But yeah, like that, you know, Jordan like kind of like coming back and then winning those championships and then retiring kind of on that last shot was like so storybook. Just like you couldn't have written it any better. Yep. But of course, he would come back, you know, a couple of years later and play for a few more years.
The Wizards or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, could tarnish that whole thing. But for me, like that, I always have that memory of being like, wow, he really just went out on top. And that was pretty dope.
For me, it's the Sopranos finale. Don't stop. Just kidding. People hate that.
I like it.
I thought it was fine. But like I started thinking about movies and shows, and ultimately the ending of the first Rocky movie is one of the best endings of all time, because he wins, but he doesn't win. Wow. Spoiler alert. Mm. You know, like he doesn't win the fight, but he wins his self-respect and went the distance. And I just think that was really gutsy to make a movie where the guy doesn't win the championship.
Yeah.
But he.
Yeah, it's not the typical story you'd expect.
Yeah.
It's a really great movie.
Oh, it is. Yeah. They should have ended right there.
No. No, sir.
See, I thought you were talking about the most recent Rocky movie. Rocky
Balboa. That did put a nice end to Rocky Balboa's story, more so than Rocky V.
My ring's outside.
Rocky V. Tommy Gunn. But then Rocky continued to exist in the Creed films.
Right.
So again, there we go. But
it's never really over.
Nothing is over. He says, that's it. I think that's a Rocket Perfect. 2. Or no.
Well, I went to the world of television. Not as popular as The Sopranos, but another HBO show, 6 Feet Under. There's the ending sequence of that series is really cool. Girls, you know, driving away, and you end up seeing like how all the characters die.
Okay.
Which was a throwback to kind of how like every episode would start with somebody dying. And then, do you guys remember the show Freaks and Geeks? It only lasted one season, and it was kind of set up to go on, and it wasn't renewed. But that last episode, I just think is so perfect. And it actually ends with the Grateful Dead Ripple being played as Lindsay Weir is cool. heading off to follow the Grateful Dead. So
who is in that show again? Isn't there a bunch of like famous people that were
everybody? James Franco,
Linda Cardellini,
yep.
Seth Rogen,
yep.
Jason Segel.
Yep, Jason Segel.
Busy Phillips. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people on that. But Judd Apatow was the creator of that. And he went, 40-year-old virgin and all that stuff.
Yeah, nice.
Well, what other things have ended strongly? Let us know. Hit us up on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds, or on our website, albumnerds.com.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right. Well, I know we were all riding the LA woman storm, but did you have any time to check out other things?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Oh, here comes the sack.
I just had some new releases in a
sack attack.
Just check out what I have in my bag.
Okay.
New releases.
Well, he dialed it back. Nice. What you got, man?
All right. I'll start out with the Lemon Twigs. Kind of throwback sound. We've talked about it on the show a few times before. They have a new album out called A Dream Is All We Know. The brothers from Long Island, is that right? They are from Long Island. I just assume they were from the UK. So yeah, Lemon Twigs. This is a nice little jangly, kind of like 60s Britpop sounding record. You're a fan of these guys, right, dude?
Yeah, I've enjoyed some of their records. Nothing has ever lit me on fire, but they're always very enjoyable records.
Their stuff stands out so much from other popular music of today.
I like it.
Sounds like The Wonders, The Oneaters.
Definitely of that era.
A little Beach Boys touch. It's nice.
Yeah, I think the record's really probably one of the more solid ones I've heard recently from them. All right, and then next up, something that was new to me from a folk rock duo by the name of Broadcast. They have a demos collection called Spell Blanket that just came out. So the collection of demos from 2006 to 2009, which is, I believe, the period they were most active. It's kind of like English psychedelic electronic folk is how it's described. Boy, this record really got under my skin. I was listening to it a little bit over the weekend. It's kind of like a haunting, really dark folk rock record with some elements of electronica sprinkled in that I think work really well.
It kind of has a PJ Harvey something or other to me.
Yeah, there's that rawness to it. Like you'd expect. I mean, they're demos, so that's part of it. But there's also kind of like an underlying aggression, I would say. Right. Because they're just kind of like gnarly sounding. I like that. I'll have to go back and listen to some of their discography. And last one for me, kind of a really strange record from a group named Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats. The album is called, I think it's in French, Nel Aura Bleu.
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 Bleu. Bleu.
I would describe this as like psychedelic progressive metal mixed with like some pretty lengthy spoken word passages, which I believe are also in French. It's a long record. I think it's like an hour and a half. And it kind of like comes and goes, and whether or not it's being musical or just kind of like these long spoken word passages. But when it's being musical, it's very interesting and doing some really cool things that are kind of like metal adjacent, but also just kind of more like soundtrack sound to it as well. It's kind of cool.
This part's not in French.
No, the lyrics, the vocals are in English, but then there's like these long dialogues that are in French.
I was about ready to not check it out at all, but no.
It's pretty interesting. And with a name like Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats, how can you go wrong, really? What you been digging on, Don?
Well, one of my favorites, The, which is a band, basically. It's a vehicle for singer-songwriter Matt Johnson. They are finally coming out with a rock album. It's called Ensoulment. It's going to be released September 6th. There's a song out there called Cognitive Dissonant. So they haven't actually come out with an album since 2000's Naked Self.
What is he, Leonard Cohen now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's getting a little more raspy there. Yeah. Like, this is originals, right? These are...
Yeah.
Not Hank or Hank Williams again.
That's right. I forgot we did that record, yeah.
Cool. We'll check it out. Let us know when it releases, though. I'm sure we'll have a build-up over the next few weeks. Of.
I should be, you know, kind of wrapping up listening to a certain record by then.
Oh, man.
Just in time.
Pet Shop Boys. Yeesh. Yeah, so I came across something kind of interesting that was released this month. It's a new single from Randy Travis.
Nice.
It's called Where That Came From. But the thing is, Randy sounds great here.
Yeah, he is.
But in 2013, he suffered a severe stroke that injured his brain to the point where he has no speech center. Like, he's cognitive, but he can't speak and he can't sing.
Okay.
He still wants to be involved in music, so they got another singer to sing the song, and then they used AI and his voice from previous recordings.
Oh boy. We're crossing over.
Huh? It's a slippery slope, boys.
So it is Randy Travis, but it's not exactly live.
He seems thrilled, and his family was in tears. I watched, there's a Jane Pauley interviewed them on Sunday morning, you know, that show. It's a great story. I mean, it begs the question, where does AI fit in? Is it okay if the artist is involved and wants to do it because it's the only way he can sing? Or does it get us to the point where we're getting new Elvis albums and it ain't Elvis? You know, it's...
That's interesting having the artist involved. That kind of does change the equation a little bit for me.
Yeah. But I guess they've tried some other songs and it's not coming out right. They can't get the vibrato right. This one sounded like him. So and it's on the radio and stuff. I mean, it's crazy. So
wonder if Bruce Botnick is involved.
All right. So next we'll go to an old favorite, a doomy favorite. Some doom metal.
I thought you said doomy.
Well, doomy, Paul Bearer, doomy. Yeah, so Paul Bearer, the doom metal band formed in Little Rock, Arkansas in 2008. This new album is called Mind Burns Alive. It's their fifth studio album. And it's, you know, it's atmospheric and dark and a little gloomy, a little doomy.
I like his voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been listening to this quite a bit the last few days as well. I like it. It's a little more easy to listen to, a little less, less metal, a little more chill, a little atmospheric than maybe the past records. But
it seems a little more accessible.
Yeah, but they're great. I mean, I think they're doing good things for the genre.
And then lastly, I'll talk about something I picked up recently on vinyl. It's the Bee Gees album, Bee Gees First. And we did talk about this on an episode back in 2017. It's the Bee Gees when they were a full band and they hadn't become disco guys yet. And obviously, To Love Somebody is a classic, but it's more beatly, jangly thing.
It's the pre-Chipmunk era.
Yes, the pre-Chipmunk era.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's them when they were more of a psychedelic rock, you know, pop rock band, and it's a really fun listen, and I got it for a nice price.
Yeah, they're really good songwriters. I underappreciated how good they are writing the song.
Yeah, go check it out, y'all.
All right, well, what have you been digging? Let us know. Hit us up on the socials, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at Album Nerds. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the show when I'm reminded of the great American singer-songwriter Rivers Cuomo, you guys might know of from Weezer.
Yeah, I look just like Buddy Holly. Oh, it's really, really moving.
Great,
yeah.
Great American literature right there. Well, he did say something I'd like to refer back to now. On an island in the sun, we'll be playing and having fun. And it makes me feel so fine, I can't control my brain.
This is some fucking great lyrics, man.
I mean, that really does sum up the summer of dawn.
Yeah, just can't control your brain on the summer of dawn. All right, with that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, Wadbot, to see what we'll be discovering on next week's episode.
The summer of Dawn continues. With that in mind, I will be choosing which albums from Dawn's curated list you will be exploring this summer. Next time, you will be traveling down south for bluesy country music with Chris Stapleton's 2015 album, Traveler.
Nice.
Very nice.
I definitely could use a dose of Stapleton right about now.
Yeah. Take two Stapletons and call me in the morning.
Yeah. There you go.
So another reference to office supplies, right? We got Mavis Staples and Chris Stapleton. Anybody else?
Could say we're hitting that easy button pretty hard in the summer.
Well done.
Don't forget, you can suggest topics for the Wheel of Discovery on our website, albumnerds.com, as well as vote for any ongoing Album Nerds Hall of Fame nominations.
What do you think of Chris Stapleton's Traveler? Let us know. Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. And please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you want to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you so much for joining us for the Summer of Dawn. We'll continue it next week, but hit us up if there's some albums that Andy and I talked about in the past that you think Dawn should talk to us about. Let us know. See ya.
Nice listening, everybody. Catch you next week.
Turn out the lights. Well, the music is your special friend.
Not bad.
Lost my picture.
That's good.
Welcome to the Summer of Dawn karaoke.
Ha ha.